Okay, so this is Bio 241. This is our first meeting, and it's important for me to remember to say the date. So if I forget, always tell me so it gets on the recorder. This is August 17th, and we're going to go over the first chapter plus a bunch of other stuff like how to log on to Blackboard and all that. So since this is a hybrid class, or maybe let me talk about students that have not registered for this class yet and how do you find your way in. Does anybody still want to register for this class? There's a few people. Okay. So at this point in time, you need an ad code. Ad codes will be given to students based on the wait list, your position on a wait list. So the way you do that is you go to the lab that you want to add, and that's really where we have the rate limiting step for registration. So if there is a no-show for that particular lab, then we'll replace that student by giving them an ad code. Okay, so you got to go to a lab. There's one this afternoon at 1 o'clock, and then there's one at 8 o'clock and at 1 o'clock again on Thursday. So there's three more chances. We did give out some ad codes for the 8 o'clock lab, so my guess is that there'll still be some opportunities to add the class either at 1 o'clock today or 8 o'clock or 1 o'clock on Thursday. Okay. So, and the only other thing that I have to say for my boss is that only officially registered students should stay in class. Okay, so if you don't get an ad code this week, then you can't just kind of tag along hoping somebody will drop, because we won't give ad codes after this week because the class moves so fast you wouldn't be able to catch up. All right, so good luck with everything. One other thing that I forgot to mention is that in Blackboard you can get these lecture PowerPoint slides, right? And it's a really good idea to print them out ahead of time. And I think I mentioned that in the lecture, that you should bring the PowerPoints for the first lecture, and usually in lab we provide all of the information for you, but as it turns out, we didn't photocopy the PowerPoints that you're going to be viewing in lab today, and it's on homeostasis, and so there should be a file in Blackboard that for the Thursday group I want you to go to and print out so that you have a hard copy so that you can take notes. Now, if you don't like to do that on PowerPoint, if you actually like to write notes just on a blank piece of paper, of course, don't do that. All right? But if you like to have the PowerPoints while you're listening to the lecture and then make some notes on it, then that you might find that really helpful. Okay? Because we won't provide you with a hard copy of Homeostasis for Lab this week. It just got lost in the shuffle of everything new. All right, so we're going to have lectures twice a week, but also once a week, you have to take a quiz online based on a module of information that is outlined in the weekly assignments. So let's log into Blackboard, or I'll log in right here. And the goal for this week is that everybody that is registered absolutely has to know how to get into Blackboard. All right, so I want you to make sure that you can do that before you leave campus this week sometime. In your lab or see me during office hours or something, we just need to get that all straightened out. So the two pieces of information you need, the first one is your username, which is your student ID number. And your student ID number starts with a really funny thing. Right? It's not a number at all. It's that ampersand. And that's got to be in there for Blackboard to work. If you just put the number in, it won't work. So if some of you have tried and couldn't log in, maybe that's the reason, right? So then your particular number, a little delay on the keyboard right here, okay? And then your WebStar password should work. That works about 90% of the time. 10% of the time, my gateway and Blackboard don't shake hands and the password gets lost. If that's the case, email me, I'll switch it to something, I'll tell you what it is, and you log in and change it back to whatever you like. Or if you see me during office hours, I'll just have you type it in, okay? All right, so this is what Blackboard looks like, and all of your classes that you're taking will be over here someplace. All right, and you probably aren't taking as many as I am, which is probably a good idea. All right, so here's physiology. And in the left-hand frame, you're going to see a bunch of tabs. Like here, if you want a copy of the syllabus, this is where you can print it out. But in lab, you will get a hard copy anyway, so you don't have to print it out. It can just be available to you right there. Or if you want to download this thing to your computer so that if you lose the hard copy and you don't want to log on to the internet every single time you want to look at the syllabus, what can you do to get this on your computer? So here's a link to the syllabus on a server someplace in the world. Who knows where it is? But if you want a copy on your own computer, what would you do to get it? Okay, you would save as, and to do a save as, you would right-click, which is not the usual mouse button that you use to click. You usually click with the left-hand mouse button to activate that link. But if you right-click, you get a pull-down menu, right? And it says save target as. Maybe different operating systems have different link statements. I forget what it says in Firefox. Okay. Oh, wait a second. I was looking at the wrong screen. Here's a cursor. Let's try it again. Oh, there we go. Save target as. The file cannot be written to the cache, whatever that means. I don't know. I'm gonna have to talk to somebody who knows how to open up the cache drawer here. Okay, but you should be able to do this on your computer. I do it all the time. Good thing I know that, in case I was going to use some document from Blackboard over here. But right click, save target as. Put it in a 241 folder on your computer someplace. That way then you have the syllabus or any other link that I have in here. You can download it to a folder and you don't have to have access to internet access to have it all the time. Yeah. Course documents. Yeah, I like that. I'll have to see what happened. Oh, maybe I copied the course and it didn't okay, and it didn't go with the You see, I don't see syllabus here. Okay. Oh, we're very security conscious here. Okay. Probably your computer is too. It might not be a bad thing. Right click. Save target as. All right. Oh, okay. Sorry about going to another screen. Where do I want to save it? I created a folder right here, so I'll dump it in a folder just to get it off the desktop. All right, save target as, and there, now you have it, okay? And the same thing for the PowerPoint slides and everything. You can open it in your computer, or you can save it, and of course, I recommend that you just save it to your computer, right? Because then you can have it, print it out. And if you don't want to print it out, that's fine. If you want to come into class with your laptop and work just in your laptop, that's fine with me, okay? All right, but to edit the slides, right, if you're going to take notes on those slides, then you will need a PowerPoint program to do that, not just the viewer. The PowerPoint viewer, which is free from Microsoft, you can't edit. So if you're going to work in your computer, you actually need the PowerPoint program. In which case, then just print them out and then you can make your own notes. Okay. Students that are adding today have to get a welcome letter from me that tells you how to log into Blackboard, even though we just demonstrated that right now. So make sure I printed out some welcome letters. There were a couple students, though, that I missed from lab and I didn't give the welcome letter to. So everybody in here, except the ones that got ad codes today, should have the welcome letter. Who did not get a welcome letter yet? Anybody? That's good, because that could be a problem if you don't have a correct email address in your gateway. But since everybody got the welcome letter, that is good. So that means I can communicate with you and it's easy for you to find me. Okay, pre-lecture reading assignments. These things will help you with lecture if you get them done before lecture. They won't help you if you do them after lecture quite as much. So you don't get course points for them, all right? But if you peruse the chapter fairly lightly and answer these questions, then they will orient you for lecture. And when I mention a new word, then it won't be the first time you've heard that word, and lectures will just sink a whole lot easier, right? So it's highly recommended that you do that. And actually, what I would like to see as you walk in the room is to show me your pre-lecture reading assignment written out, okay? Because all the other students that I've had said that's a tremendous help for them to do well in the class, all right? And again, I'm not trying to pile work on you, but the more you use the information and incorporate it into sentences and use it in your everyday life, then the easier the class is. That's all there's to it, okay? So the pre-lecture reading assignments are there for you to look at. And then the answer keys will become available after the class. And so you just have to stay tuned for where we are in lecture when these pre-lecture reading assignments take place. Okay, well, here is one of the most important things, and that is the weekly assignments. So this is truly the online material that you're going to be working with, which I won't cover in lecture, that you can cover at home or someplace. All right, so here's chapter 1, study of body function. And whenever you look at a web page, there are two important icons that I incorporate into websites. If you ever see a dollar sign, that means that is something that you actually have to do and submit to me, the instructor, for grading, because you're going to get course points for it. So that's how you earn your grade from the online part of the class. If you see a dollar sign, got to pay attention to it and complete that particular assignment. And this dollar sign says what? Week 1, Chapter 1 quiz. That's worth 10 points. And that's going to be buried someplace in the Week 1 assignment. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Except for lab, you'll have lab quizzes and then the lecture tests. So your grade is going to be based on three things: online quizzes, lab quizzes, and lecture tests. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be right here, same time. Except the final is a little bit different. I think the final starts at 10:30 or something, whenever that is in December. Okay? Yeah, basically Blackboard is a virtual classroom. So let's take a look in this first assignment right here, and let's see what things are available for you. Well, everything should have, write your goals or objectives. And so here are the objectives for the first week. These are just out of chapter 1. All right, so if you read an objective and it's something you've never heard of before, then you should probably go back and listen to a lecture or open up the textbook and read that material over again. So you should kind of be familiar with some of these things. Yeah. Okay, I'll show you. Remind me again when I get done with this. Okay. All right, and then there's going to be various videos that you can watch or animations. And after some of these animations, there might be a one or two or three question quiz, which you don't submit to me, but will stimulate your understanding, right, and working with the information. And if you don't do really well in the quiz, you can go back and watch the video once again. And it reinforces things that you learn in lab and what you learn in lecture. Right, so I don't have to be there. It's there all the time for you. Right, and then there are practice quizzes. So here are links to practice quizzes. Now, don't do all the questions that are at these links right here, just the ones that I mentioned that I thought were relevant to our particular course. Right, and these practice questions come from your textbook and from the lecture. And you can take these practice quizzes as many times as you want to get 100% on them. And when I write a lecture test, sometimes I take these questions from this website and put them on the lecture test. So that's really good for you guys to get points. Some of these questions are not real simple. Some of them are fairly critical in terms of thinking. Right, so you can't really memorize these questions. You do have to understand why the answer is correct or why it is not correct. Physiology is kind of that way. I could tell you what's on the test, but if you don't study it and learn it, it won't even matter. That's just how this class is, right? So work with these questions, because not only might some of these questions be on the test, but they might be on that weekly quiz as well. Okay. So to take this quiz, you would click right here. All right, and how do you know that this is a quiz that you have to do for course points? Ah, you got a dollar sign right there. Okay, and you can read the blurb on how you go about taking it. They're set up, so you got 10 minutes to take it. There's only 10 questions, but if you prepare yourself ahead of time, you know you're going to be done in 4 or 5 minutes, and then you just start racking up points just like that. They're set up to where all the questions are randomized, so not everybody's going to get exactly the same quiz. Once you answer a question, you can't go back to a previous question. If you try, it will probably hang up the computer program, and then that will be all the credit that you will get for that particular quiz. So don't try to go backwards if there's an option. And let's try taking this thing. Yeah.
Let's say something happens in the middle of your quiz.
Yeah.
Your
yeah. Okay, you know, that can happen a lot, but take a look around in this class. So I got, you know, over 100 students in here. I would be able to do nothing else but correct mistakes that are produced by faulty internet connections and faulty computers and things like that. So I can't go back and reactivate a quiz for you. So that's a real important issue. So if the quiz bombs out in the middle, then you get like half the points for that particular quiz. But I need to say some more things about that. Okay, and it has to do with one more icon that will be available for you. All right, and as a matter of fact, we're going to take this quiz. This quiz will be activated at noon today, along with something else. And that is, there are some extra credit quizzes. So let me see if I can find these extra credit quizzes. All right, they're not going to be so hard for you to find. All right, they're going to be right after each other. All right, right here. Here is an internet connection evaluation quiz for extra credit points. Now, do you see a dollar sign by this one? What do you see? You see, this is a postage stamp. Anybody buy any of these? It's a forever stamp, which means you buy it once, and if the postage rate changes, it's still good for mailing a letter no matter when, right? So this quiz is what I call a forever quiz. It will be activated the whole semester, and it will just keep the highest grade that you have. But if you can complete this quiz, then you know your computer is working, you know your internet connection is working, and that you got the mechanics of taking a quiz online properly. All right, so I want you to take some of these forever quizzes right away to check your internet connection and to, of course, get some extra credit points. And then if you ever switch your computer out, maybe you were working with a TCP or Ethernet cable, a TCP/IP cable, and you wanted to do a quiz on a wireless at Starbucks or something, right? Oh, but now you don't know if the wireless at Starbucks is really going to work. How would you prove that to yourself? Yeah, take this connection quiz real quick. And even if you got a zero on it, it won't matter because it will just always store your highest grade for the end of the semester, right? So always check your internet connection. There are two sites that are very handy, which I want you to look at. There's speedtest.net and pingtest.net. This will give you some very important benchmarks for how your internet connection is working. And remember, it's a requirement of the class that you have a reliable high-speed internet connection. And here's the definition, right? Your download bandwidth has got to be greater than 17.5 megabits per second. All right, upload bandwidth, same thing. Oh, no, these are on my computer. No, that's too fast. These are the benchmarks right here. Download, 768 kilobits per second. So the same for download. You go to the ping test, activate the ping test, and it will tell you what your internet connection is. All right, so if you can't meet these benchmarks, then you might have a problem actually taking a quiz. The same thing for the latency, how long it takes for your computer to communicate with another server someplace on the internet, right? And packet loss. There should be no loss of information between your computer and the server, so that should be very close to zero, right? 2% is basically zero. And it should be fairly stable, right? The jitter should be 5 milliseconds. So when you take the ping test and speed test, write down what these numbers are so that when you take this forever quiz, you can answer the questions. Okay, and then you know you have a pretty good sense of if your computer is reliable and if your internet connection is reliable. All right, so I need for you guys to be proactive and make sure that that really works, because I really don't have time with hundreds of students to go in and reset a quiz because something's not working properly. Okay, all right, and then I told you what I have at home for just for comparison right here as well. Okay, then there's also a forever quiz on the syllabus. Read the syllabus online or read the hard copy that you get in lab and answer some of these questions. All right, and I think there's maybe 12 questions and you get half a point per question, and that's extra credit. There's not a lot of extra credit in this class, but these are a couple important points, places where you can get extra credit. The only other one that I know of is in lab this week, where I want you to draw an illustration of a response loop, which you guys go over in lab. And some of you guys right now in this class have more than 100% in the course, because the quiz today in lab is an extra credit quiz. All right, but that helped you prepare for the class and get you oriented. And that's really nice, because what do you need for an A? You only need a 90%. And some of you have got way over 100% already in the class by taking that extra credit quiz. And if you do these forever quizzes, that's even more. All right, so that's nice. Who's got more than 100% in class already? Okay, that's good. All right. All right, so let's take this quiz. So you click on this link. There's just a couple little tricky points because computer programs can try to anticipate how people think and behave, but they can't do an exactly perfect job all the time. All right. So I want to tell you about some of the shortfalls with this program so you don't fall into any of the traps. So click on that link, and it will work. Good. So it says to begin, click begin. That's very nice. It's like clicking start to turn your computer off in Windows. I don't know how that happens. Not quite as bad. All right, so there's information here. Maybe you should just read one time. All right, so this, it just says it will always be available to you. When you're done with the quiz, you have to click the Save and Submit button. That's very important. If you don't do that, then Blackboard will only let you take this quiz one time, even though I want you to take it the whole semester. So if you don't click that, then you have to send me an email, and then I got to mess around with Blackboard. All right, so it's best to keep it automated, right? Because then I can think about giving a good lecture instead of messing around with programming inside Blackboard. So that's real important. So let's see that. All right, so these are things that you should read. So here is the first question. Now, this is exactly how the real-world four course points quizzes will work. You get one question at a time. All right, and so here is a question. We don't even have to answer it correctly because why? Well, we could take it a thousand times if we wanted to. But from the results from this website shows that my jitter from whatever computer you were working with was less than 150%. You don't want a lot of jitter. So less than sounds like something good. All right, so let's click that. Now, how do we get to the next question? We've got a couple options right here. One used to, we just went to a new version of Blackboard, I'm not that familiar with it, but it had a save button right here. And if you click the save button, it would torpedo the program and you'd get a zero on the quiz. Now why they put that button there, I have no idea, but you know, somebody thought it was a good idea for some particular kind of class. So this button I don't ever want you to push. The button I do want you to push is this little arrow right here. Okay, so look at that arrow and click it, and that will take you to the next question. All right, so then there's all that stuff again. Choose all that apply. Clicking the save button when taking a quiz results in a zero score for the quiz. Saves the answers for a later time? No. All right, suspends the quiz so that you can answer the telephone? No. Pauses the quiz so you can take care of an emergency? No. Crashes the quiz program, which cannot be made up or reset? Yes. All right, so notice that those boxes up there are not radio buttons. And questions where you have multiple choices or multiple answers, I always write choose all that apply. So it could be more than one. All right, so click all of those. Now, what do? Click the save button? No, don't click the save button. Arrow, next one. Okay. All right, so next question. Results from ping test show that my packet loss, less than 2%. Sounds good. Arrow, right? Okay, previous version of Blackboard was really handy. All you had to do is hit return, but return doesn't work on the computers I've been working on. All right, now let's just say I got bored, and I don't want to answer the rest of the questions, and I just leave the quiz just like that. I go someplace else. You know, I can click any link here if I want to. I can bail out of the quiz. But then Blackboard doesn't update itself properly, and it will never let you take this forever quiz again. So even if you don't want to finish, make sure you go to the very end, right? We'll just say okay. Oh, I didn't try this before. Let's see if this works. 5 of 8, all right, that's fine. Yeah, let's not answer that. You got to go to the very end, and what you have to do, okay, just a couple more clicks. All right, so you'll get the hang of this. Okay, so now we're done with the quiz. And you don't want to hit save, but the arrow is gone. You do have to click save and submit. If you click save and submit, it will store your highest grade forever, and you can have access to this forever quiz throughout the whole semester. Okay, so you got to complete it. Otherwise, it hangs up. It doesn't know how to truncate this particular assignment. As a matter of fact, that's true with all of the quizzes. Okay, so we're going to hit save and submit like that. Yeah, that's fine with me. Confirm, okay, and then it will tell you I guess we have to hit OK if we want to see results. Right here. Okay, so for the forever quizzes, it will show you your answer and the correct answer. But for the other dollar sign quizzes, it will only show you how many you got right. It won't tell you which questions you got wrong. So if you want to know what questions you got wrong, you got to see me during office hours. Okay? Okay, but for the forever quizzes, I don't care so much. Okay, so that gets loaded into your grade book then. Okay, so how are we doing? You got any questions on Blackboard so far? I can't go over everything in Blackboard because it would just take a couple of weeks to do that. But we'll slowly catch on to how things are working. You just got to get on there, mouse around. Today at 1 o'clock, a lot of things open up to you and become available. Yeah. The online quizzes?
It says on Tuesday at 11.
Okay. So since the reason why I think a hybrid class is really nice is because sometimes a student will procrastinate. Right, they'll wait and start studying for an exam maybe the night before or two nights before. Well, in a class like this, that is just it's just not going to work at all. Right, so you got to stay on schedule, and a hybrid class will help you stay on schedule by making sure you do a certain amount of work every week. And so every week there's going to be an online quiz based on the weekly assignments, right, for that week. So you would just click for, and this is week one, so you click on that. And then that brings you up to speed, that will keep you paced with the class, right? So that will keep you current every week. So the deadline for the weekly quiz is Tuesday night at 11 p.m. So from here on out, not this Tuesday night, but next Tuesday, you have to take an online quiz every night at Tuesday night, even if it's a holiday, right? Even if it's an MLK holiday, which it isn't. I don't think we have any holidays on Tuesday. Right, but every Tuesday you got an online quiz, and that will just keep you abreast of the class so you don't get behind, because it's terrible to get behind in a class like this. Right, so that is a question on the syllabus quiz. When do you have quizzes, online quizzes? Every Tuesday. The deadline is 11 p.m. Okay, and Blackboard is most busy late in the evenings during the day. So sometimes Blackboard might hang up if you're starting to take a quiz at 10:30, because that's when everybody's trying to meet these deadlines. So guess when's a good what's a good time to do it? Early in the evening, maybe 6 o'clock, or get them done, you know, Saturday or Sunday afternoon or something, and, you know, take the pressure off yourselves. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about that. Right now, this week, I only have the first week available, all right? And that will take you until a week from today. And you can see that this week is from the 16th until August 24th, and then the next week I can activate it on the 25th, or I can activate maybe five or six weeks that will prepare you for the upcoming test. Okay, so I can do one at a time so that when you click on a weekly assignment, it takes you to the pertinent week, or I could have a series of them that will prepare you for the upcoming test. But if I have a bunch of options there, you have to keep straight in your mind what the date is and what week I really have to complete these quizzes. So it can be confusing. So I would like feedback from you. Is it best for me to open up all of the weekly assignments pertinent to the upcoming test, or just that one week that you're responsible for? If I open up all of them, you can get ahead of schedule, which is great, but it means it could be more confusing, right? You could miss one. Like if I opened up week 2, 3, and 4 and you went to week 4, and you didn't go back to do week 1, then you would just miss those points. So raise your hand if you would like to see a chunk of weekly assignments activated, or just one a week. A chunk that would relate to a test, an upcoming test. So a chunk, okay, or just one at a time? One at a time. Well, it looks like the chunkers kind of won out. So, yeah. So you got to get a calendar and just see what week you're working on, okay? And if you go into your grade book, you'll be able to tell if you took a quiz or not. So there is a way to figure out if you've completed the assignments for that week. Yeah. That's okay.
August 16th to August 24th, when you put the chunk up, you will still have the dates up.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so I will try to get that going. Oh, I pushed the button I didn't want to push. Hopefully it will go away. All right, so that's probably enough of an introduction for Blackboard and how to mouse around. And in lab, of course, you can do that with your lab instructor, right? So I think we're doing pretty good. That, there, went away. All right, so let's start looking at today's lecture. So let me put Blackboard away. But don't forget, your big goal this week, while I am on campus and your lab instructor is on campus, you've got to make sure you can log into Blackboard. Don't waste the weekend. All right, make sure you can get onto Blackboard by this weekend. All right, well, I see that I don't have the minimize sign right here. Yeah, do you have it up there? No. Yeah? Let's look at it. Let's take a look. All right, so this is nice, just random access. So you can just click on any of these things, and it will just take you right there. All right, so course documents. Oh, yeah, that's right here? That's a video. Oh, let me say something about that. We're going to have, I produce some videos for this class. They're online videos. Most of them are flash files. They could be WMV files. And a lot of people like to use Windows Media Player. And in some cases, that works just fine. But I know some of you have not updated your Windows Media Player since 1995. All right? Which means that it's not going to play any kind of HD video. It won't play Flash. It might hang up routinely. You might get the video, but not the audio track. Or you might get the audio track, but not the video. All right? So you can update. Make sure you update your Windows Media Player. But I have a better solution. And that better solution is... where do I have it? Plugins? Let's find plugins. Ah, plugins. Here's plugins. Here is a free download, and the download is the DivX Video Player. All right, so this is like Windows Media Player, but this thing is fantastic. I've never had it hang up with any kind of motion picture format. It will play all kinds of formats, including HD video, and it's a really small program, very powerful, doesn't take up a lot of space on your computer, doesn't come with spamware. And it's so powerful, I think it can play up to maybe 20 HD videos at one time in 20 different windows. That's something Windows Media Player won't even come close to. So I would just download this DivX Player and play all the Flash files and WMV files on the DivX Player. Okay, so that's a pretty hot program. So did that kind of answer your question?
Well, when you go on there,
Oh, maybe we should go there? Okay. So, all because you have online questions that I want you to answer. And the first, I think I didn't know your question, the first page you come to asks for username and password. Is that your question? How do you get by that? Oh. Okay, let's click on that. Where were we? Okay, like the sarcomere shortening. Okay. You might be able to right click and store it on your computer, I'm not sure. But I just left clicked. Okay. I don't care if it's secure or not. So I say no. Oh, that link isn't taking you to the video. They're over here. I might have to look at that. So here's the sarcomere. So you have to click on that. All right. And then play.
Okay.
So that's kind of what it looks like on a PC. Yeah. I'm not sure I heard what you said. Yeah, yeah. I named the link after that video. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I might have to look at that. Yeah, I might have to take a look at that. Anybody else try chapter? Was anybody else able to get chapter 2 PowerPoints? You were. Some people know. One person, yeah, some people know. I don't know what happened. Okay. Okay. Well, what I've done for this semester, let me see if I can go back, is that these video links, why not go back? Okay. Those video links, instead of in course information, I'm going to embed in the weekly assignments. And I'll make sure that it will, I'll try to make it take you exactly to that video and not to McKinley. Okay. They might be incorporated into part of the test. Yeah. So they're very helpful. They're produced very well. They're nice. All right. Let me just go to weekly assignments. Let me show you one other place that might be just a little confusing. When you go to okay. So this is the companion website for your course book, for your textbook. All right, and what do you see? Well, I see a big login, right? Username and password. Well, guess what? You don't need to enter any of that information because I'm not testing you through this particular server or website. So all you have to do to get access to all of this information is just click resources. All right, so you don't need, so here's all the different chapter informations, right? So you've got animated quizzes, practice tests, and quizzes. You can do all that, but I don't want to really see the results, right? So that's why you don't need a username and password. Nobody's keeping any data on how you do on all the practice tests and quizzes. All right, so should I go back and show you that again? Don't need a username or password. Just click resources. And you can do that for the previous edition of the textbook as well, Fox 10. All right, no username or password is necessary. So don't send me any work that you're doing unless you have, what, a dollar sign by it. And all of the other modules that I have in here, it will say, do not submit to your instructor. You don't have to submit to your instructor. Okay. All right, so let's start lecture somehow. Where did I have it? Wow, it's just really hard to move on this one because I don't have a minimize. Where do you think it is? There. There. Okay. That's good. All right. And then here, I think the problem is that this thing got expanded. All right. So let's start talking about information relative to the course. All right. So we're up over here. And can you see that okay? Or should I turn a light down? That's good. Is that better? That's better, and you still can see what you're doing? Okay, let's try that. All right, so chapter one, study of body function. And this chapter, you're going to spend a lot of time on in lab, so a lot of these things that we talk about will be reinforced in lab this week. So this week, you don't really do a whole lot. You don't really break a lot of glassware or blow equipment up, which is really a lot of fun. It's gonna, you're going to have another lecture and do a few things. All right, but you'll get arrow options. Okay, great. Okay, so you all know the difference between, say, physiology and anatomy. What's a good definition of anatomy?
It's the gross structure of the body.
Yeah, it's how the body is put together, the structure of the body. And you could say, well, it's a scientific study of structure of living things, but the living things that we're most interested in here is the human body, right? So that is anatomy. And then so physiology is kind of, we piggyback onto that definition. Physiology is the scientific structure of how the human body functions. All right, so what do you think is fundamental? Which process should you learn first? Should you learn structure first, or should you learn physiology first?
Structure.
Yeah, structure first, because the structure really is the basic building block of how things actually function inside your body. So that's why you all had to pass anatomy first before taking a physiology class, right? So that's a pretty important prerequisite. And furthermore, I would like to say that if you have a certain structure that allows you a certain kind of function, right, and this structure could be at a gross level. When we say gross anatomy, what are we referring to? Not disgusting or anything like that. It's just what? Big. Something you can see with your naked eye, right? Okay. So if you change something about the structure of your body, what's going to happen to the physiology? It's going to change the physiology, right? Because the anatomy or the structure is fundamental to physiology. And we're going to see that at the subatomic level. We're going to learn some chemistry in here. That's true at the chemical level. That's true at the organelle level. And it's true with the macrophysiology events that are happening inside your body. So as we change the structure of a protein, guess what happens to the function of that protein inside your body? It changes, right? It might be for the better or for the worse, right? If we change the structure of DNA, then the functioning of your body is going to change as well. So I want you to appreciate that link between structure and function, or the link between anatomy and physiology. That's a real important theme in this class. And as a matter of fact, pathophysiology is a scientific study on how physiological processes are altered by disease or injury. So we can kind of extrapolate backwards in time. If physiology is changing and becoming pathophysiology inside your body, what does that really mean in terms of structure? Yeah, some structural component inside your body is changing as well. Maybe a receptor has changed shape, or maybe there's a mutation in a gene, right? The structure of that particular DNA sequence changed, which then translates into some change in physiology, which is not beneficial to the organism. All right, so that is anatomy, physiology, and pathophysiology. All right, the first thing we're going to talk about is the scientific method. Okay, and this is just a really boring topic to talk about, but it's extremely important. All right, the scientific method has a number of steps. The first step is to form a testable hypothesis about some observations in your everyday life. All right, so a hypothesis is just a wild guess on how you think the laws of the universe have been set up so that the world behaves in a certain way. And it should really behave that way all the time. And in order to be a part of the scientific method, that hypothesis or guess has to be testable. There has to be a way to prove or disprove your guess if it's real or not, right? So if you are assuming or basing some of your assumptions on faith, like through some kind of religious process, like, for instance, is there God or not? Is there a way to prove that God is, there's an entity in our universe or outside our universe or someplace around in reality? There's no way to prove or disprove that, right? So that is outside the realm of science, right? So anything that you have to take on faith or belief, that really doesn't relate to the scientific method one way or the other. Okay. And after you form a hypothesis, right, or after you experience a number of events and take a guess on how the world operates, then you want to perform some experiments to test your hypothesis, right, through experiments. And it's really nice to set up experiments so that you can get quantitative results, so that when you make a measurement or an observation, you're using some nice instrumentation. Like, for instance, you might want to use a thermometer to measure temperature. You don't want just somebody to say, oh, something feels warm or cold or whatever. You actually want to measure what the temperature is using an instrument that is reliable. All right, and then after you collect all the results, you should be able to draw conclusions from all the data that you collected and to tell if it supports your hypothesis or if it doesn't. So a hypothesis certainly could be true or it could be false, right? It's only something that you can sort of believe in is after you collect data that supports your hypothesis. All right, so a hypothesis is just a guess. But if your data does support the hypothesis, if it doesn't contradict what you were thinking, right, then you can use those results to develop a theory. All right, so a theory is a general statement explaining something about the natural world, and a theory is based on a proven hypothesis. All right, so people use these terms incorrectly all the time. What kind of, which of these is ranked more important? Is a theory more important? Should a theory be more important to somebody or a hypothesis? A theory, because it's based on, right, a proven hypothesis, based on scientific results, right? So a lot of times I know we're walking around on the street talking to friends and somebody will say, oh, I have a theory about something. Okay, I have a theory. Friday night, you know, if we go over here, we can get in, okay, and shoot some pool or something. Tables aren't crowded, okay? But is that a theory? That's just a wild guess, right? Somebody should really say, I have a hypothesis about something. Well, that's just too big a word to say all the time. But since you're in a science class right now, you guys have to know what the difference is, right? Okay, the difference between a theory and a hypothesis. Okay. When you test a hypothesis, there are two groups of subjects, right, to be a good scientific study. There is an experimental group and a control group. And let's just pick kind of a wild, silly example. What can I say? How about somebody says, you know, every time I get in the sauna, I start to sweat. Okay, is that a theory or a hypothesis? That's a hypothesis. So let's go about testing that hypothesis, right? Okay, so we get a bunch of people, and all these people should be pretty much the same, right? Or we could include diversity in that group, but then that might be hard to describe all of the events that we see. But the first time, start with a group that's not very diverse, and let's break it down into two groups of people, okay? And then we're going to have somebody put these people in the sauna, and what are they going to do? They're going to observe to see if they're going to sweat or not, okay? So the experimental group, what do? You take these people, you put them in a sauna, and what do you got to remember to do? Turn the sauna on, right? And of course, we all know, we would all guess, well, gee whiz, you're going to start sweating because it's 110 degrees inside the sauna, all right? Now, what about this control group? This is a very important step. What can you say about the control group? We want to take these people and put them in the sauna, but what are we not going to do to the sauna? We're not going to turn it on. We're going to keep it at room temperature. And now what can we imagine in our mind when we compare the data? Maybe there is an effect of taking somebody and just putting them in that small room that makes them sweat. And so now we have control for all those different effects, and now we know what the effect of a working high-temperature sauna is, right? So we always got to have two groups to compare to control for extraneous events that might change our results. And there are a lot of people that are claustrophobic. We put them in a small room like that, guess what's going to happen to them? They're going to start sweating, right? Even though the sauna is not turned on. So we got to have that control group. I touched that button again. Okay, now here's something else too. When you do a scientific study, it has to be a double blind study. And what does that mean? That means when you make a control group and an experimental group, you can't tell the people what group they're in. You can't tell somebody, oh, you're in the control group, because guess how they're going to behave? Like a null group or a control group, right? So you can't educate them what group you're in. And as a matter of fact, the person, right, that's giving them their swimming trunks and a towel and putting them in the sauna, guess what? They can't even know what group that person is in, because they will give subconscious cues to that person what group that they're in. So that's why it's double blind. So the person doing the experimenting doesn't know, and the control and the people a part of the study don't know. That's what we mean by double blind. Okay? Double blind. Okay, so two groups, experimental and control, perform double blind. And then quantitative measurements are performed. Okay? I don't know what would be a good way to quantitative measure. Maybe you could have them walk in with a robe, measure the weight of the robe before they go in dry, right? And then take the robe after they sweated for 10 or 15 minutes and weigh the robe again, and probably it would be heavier, right? And that would be how much water that they lost from their body, right? Using the scale. And then we also like to analyze the data using statistics, which means statistics is impartial. It will analyze every number or every set of numbers with the same algorithm every time. It's unbiased. So statistics can't introduce bias into experimental results. All right, so you can see this is kind of a complicated, let me just see what the next slide looks like. Oh, good. Kind of a complicated process. And you might be wondering, why on earth do people subject themselves to this objective process all the time with all of these different steps and the two different control groups, and you got to have a double-blind study, on and on and on. What's the purpose of the scientific method? This is really an important take-home message. It might be the most important thing to understand. I don't think it really tells you in your book why. Okay.
To back up your theory?
Yeah, to back up your theory. It's really to make sure that your theory is valid. So the purpose of the scientific method is to provide everybody with reliable information. Information that you can count on. All right? I'm sure we've all had people in our lives that we were all happy to be around, but they were giving us wrong information all the time. Oh, I'll meet you at a certain place and then not show up. Okay? That's a drag. So we want to have information that we can rely on. And that's really important in medicine, because if we start treating people, we want to have reliable ways of treating them so that they get better, not worse. Right? That's especially true for, you can relate to that, I'm sure, by yourself or with any part of your family. Right? So the purpose of the scientific method, even though it might seem arduous, is to give you reliable information. That's the whole point of it. All right, so that's all I want to say about scientific method, I believe. Okay, I thought I had another thought, but that's good. All right, so the next topic is homeostasis. And homeostasis is a way that we're going to think about how your body regulates itself to maintain life. And I guess maybe a really good, easy place to start is, right now, are you in equilibrium with this room in terms of temperature? Which means that, right, this model of the universe right here, or whatever, all right, is at equilibrium with the room in terms of temperature. If I were to measure the temperature of the tabletop over here, let's just say what it is, I don't know, maybe it's 75 degrees? Guess what the temperature of this model is right here? 75 degrees, because it's at equilibrium, right? They've reached the same temperature. Now, what about you? Are you at equilibrium with the room? No. What's your temperature? 98.6, perhaps, right in that range. Okay. And so we are different than our surroundings, because we have to be different to maintain living processes inside our body. And homeostasis kind of describes how your body adjusts everything, all the physiologic processes, right, to maintain life. In order to stay alive, we have to be at 98.6. If we're a higher temperature than that, what do we call that? That's a disease state. That's called hyperthermia. If you're lower than that, that's a disease process. That is hypothermia, right? You can get a little bit higher or a little bit lower and still not die, but you can't vary wildly. Right? Because that will be a lethal situation. Okay. So homeostasis is a condition in which blood pressure, that's the pressure of blood inside your blood vessels, pH, who knows what pH is? We're going to look at pH. It's a measure of acidity or alkalinity inside your body. That's real important, because that determines reactions that can take place. Blood pressure, various fluids, and other factors, maybe like glucose concentration in your blood or sodium concentration, electrolyte concentration in your blood, how all of these things are maintained within a range of values suitable to support life. So homeostasis doesn't mean that your body temperature has to be exactly 98.6 every second of your life, right? It can elevate a little bit, but it can't get too high. And as it starts to go high, some things have to change to bring it back down to that absolute normal value. Okay? So because of that, it's a dynamic state. Things are changing all the time in your body, where all the body systems are working and constantly adjusting to control the changing internal and external conditions. All right? So that's homeostasis. We're going to talk about this a bunch. It's kind of an advanced concept to have. All right? So we're going to develop an understanding of homeostasis. So, in order for homeostasis to take place, different parts of your body have to communicate over short distances and long distances as well. Right? So communication between cells is very important. And sometimes it is done with signaling molecules. Sometimes one cell will release a chemical. It will be a chemical messenger that goes to another cell, and it will tell that other cell something. It will change the behavior of that cell. So some of these are what we call long-range reflexes. Okay, so here we have a cell that, and it's a hormone-secreting cell. It's going to secrete a chemical, and we call this a hormone, because this chemical is picked up by the blood. And where does the blood take it? It takes it to the heart. But it doesn't stop there. It goes everywhere in your body, right? So this hormone goes everywhere in your body, but it will only have an effect on certain cells in your body, and we call those target cells or target tissues. A target tissue is a target tissue, or a target cell is a target cell, if it has a receptor for this particular hormone. So this hormone might go to the heart, but if the heart doesn't have a receptor, guess what? It will have no effect on the heart, okay? But if it's another kind of muscle or a gland, it will tell that gland to maybe stop secreting something or secrete something, right? So this is an important definition of the endocrine system and a hormone. So the endocrine system has glands that secrete things, right? And an important feature there is, what kind of gland is an endocrine gland? Sometimes we cover this in anatomy, sometimes not. And it's based on a duct. It does not have a duct, right? So an endocrine gland is a ductless gland. It doesn't need a duct because the hormone, how does the hormone get to where it's going? Not through a duct, but through the circulatory system, right? It's just picked up by, what part of the circulatory system does a hormone get picked up by? Okay, what do you got? You got an artery? You got vein? What's in between? You got capillaries. Which one of those three, in the simplest case, where can exchange take place? Only capillaries. And then from anatomy, you should kind of know why. And that's because, what? Capillaries are real thin walls, right? So diffusion can take place through those thin walls. So an endocrine gland secretes a hormone. It gets picked up by a capillary, transported through the whole blood, right, through the whole body. And then it can diffuse out of another capillary in another part of the body where it can bind to a receptor in a target cell right here. Okay, so that's what we call a long-range reflex, because it can go all the way from your brain, right, down to an ovary or testes or something, right, long range. Another kind of signaling molecule is a neurotransmitter. A neurotransmitter is a molecule that's secreted by a neuron. So here's a nerve cell. Nerve cell conducts electrical information, and we're going to spend a lot of time looking at the electrical events of this nerve cell right here. When that electrical activity reaches the axon terminus, it's going to release a chemical called a neurotransmitter, because this is a neuron, and it's going to diffuse to another cell or another neuron, and it's going to change the behavior of that second cell. But just like in this target cell over here, which had to have receptors, what about these neurons or effector cells over here? What do they have to have in order to sense this neurotransmitter? They've got to have a receptor too, okay? And that receptor is going to change the physiology of that cell. So what can you tell me about that receptor? It's got to have a particular structure, a particular shape, all right? It's got to have a particular shape that matches up with this neurotransmitter so that it can sense it, okay? So that's a neurotransmitter. So you got hormone and neurotransmitter. Come on, cursor, neurotransmitter. But every once in a while, something is like a combination of these two things, which is this third case right here. Here we have a nerve cell, and when it gets stimulated electrically, it releases a chemical. It doesn't diffuse across a synapse to an effector cell. It actually gets picked up by the blood. So now what would you call something like that? Something that looks like a neurotransmitter, but it's distributed like a hormone. Then we just say, guess what? Aha, that's got to be a neurohormone. Right, so there are little complexities that we have to deal with, and that gets distributed by the blood, and here we have a target cell, and how would you know that's a target cell? What does it have? It's got to have a receptor to that particular neurohormone. And we're going to look at some specific examples of these things throughout the class, but you got to at least understand some general attributes of these things. There are also short range, right, or local control. When we say short range, that means that it's just going to behave in a certain way just in one little local area, not throughout your whole body. So local control is an important concept. So if here is a cell, it's going to release a chemical that's going to go to a neighboring cell. It's not going to require the circulatory system to distribute anywhere. We call that a paracrine agent. Okay. And then here is another special case of a paracrine agent. When one cell secretes a signaling molecule that then goes back and, and affects the physiology of the cell that secreted it. That seems kind of silly, but that happens. Why is this local cell right here sensitive to this autocrine agent? What does it have to have? It's got to have a receptor to that signaling molecule that it secreted. We call that autocrine. It can self-stimulate. All right, so guess what? I think these are exam figures. So I tell you what, one thing that you should do is go and look at the exam study guides. Okay? And I'll probably stop here today. Okay, let's find those in Blackboard. I don't know if I logged out yet or not from Blackboard. Okay? Before you go, let's see if we can find them. Download the exam study guides. It will tell you what end of chapter questions I like. I don't like all of them. Okay? I might photocopy an end of chapter question and put it on the exam. I like all of those online questions. I might take some of the questions that are online that you use for your weekly quiz, put them on the lecture exam. And I also like to have a graphical component on the test where I might photocopy a picture of a diagram that's in your book or a diagram that I provide you. For instance, like this diagram right here that's not in your book, but I provide it for you in your PowerPoint slides. And I might erase autocrine agent right here and put a question mark there on the test. And I might ask you, what is the name of that signaling molecule that goes back and self-stimulates the cell that secretes it? And you don't want to say hormone. You don't want to say neurotransmitter, right? You don't want to say paracrine agent. The best answer would be autocrine. Okay? So I like to use a lot of graphics in here. Practice that. These pictures are in the exam study guide, and you can print them out, and you can practice them 100 times, so you get 100% on that part of the test. And you know what? You guys are going to be doing that by the time the class is over. And as a matter of fact, those of you that really need an A in this class, you can do that on the very first test. Practice those exam figures, because those are like 3 points on a test, right? It's going to be these exact same figures. Yeah, I do. Okay, thanks for reminding me. Okay, I need the sign-in sheet really bad. I need the sign-in sheet, and I need for you to sign the sign-in sheet because that is your... Oh, I never passed it out? Shame on you. Okay, in lab and in lecture, you always have a sign-in sheet except for today. Okay, so I won't know who's here today or who's not. And if you want to see where that exam study guide is, I'll see if I can find it right now. So that's it for class. I probably won't be able to hear you. You probably have to come down. Yeah. Hey.
I have a different teacher for lab. I was thinking it was possible if I could switch to work.
I don't have a lab.
For physiology,
I don't have any lab. I tell you what, before I talk anymore, let me turn my mic off. I have adjuncts for everything.